Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, M, content creator, podcaster, mom of two. As women, we go through so many different seasons of life, changes, transitions, those big moves. This feeling of connectedness is something I feel like we need more of to help us through those seasons. And to be able to tap into that, no matter where you are in the world, it's not easy. And my hope is that this podcast can be even a sliver of that for you. So with that, here's a new season of The Big Move. Okay, guys, we have a little bit of London on the pod today, so I am thrilled to share my next guest, Anoni Forbat. She's an influencer, comedian, and host of the hugely popular Adulting podcast, and most recently, a new author of a recent title, Bad Influence, Reflections on a Life Lived Online. I love how real, raw, and unapologetic Anoni is. We get into so much on this episode. We're talking therapy and how it's been a great tool for her in navigating change, authenticity, and how the lines can get blurred in our social media-driven world, and her approach in staying connected to herself whilst living a busy life both on and offline. Now let's get into the episode. Anoni, hi, and welcome to the Big Move podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. Long time no see.
Long time no see. We were just chatting. I feel like the last time I saw you was pre-COVID, pre-lockdown at a brand event, having like a lovely breakfast down in London town. So it's fun for me to have a little bit of London on the podcast today, to be honest with you.
I love that. Well, it's so funny thinking about how much has changed in that time, even though it kind of feels like not that long ago. But I think I just moved to London when we met, maybe. So yeah, it's funny.
I know. It's crazy. It feels like a time warp. I'm sat here in America. So lots of things have changed on both sides here. But to dive in, can you give our audience a quick background on who you are and what you are all about?
Sure. So I am, I guess, predominantly an influencer and a podcaster, and I dabble in a bit of stand-up comedy. And I'm now miraculously an author as well. And my page, I got into being an influencer kind of accidentally, which is where the book kind of starts off. When I was at uni studying English literature, and I got really into fitness. And then since then, over the last however many, maybe like 7 years, my content has kind of evolved as I've grown up with my page, and I've covered like all various different topics. And it's now sort of, I talk about books and feminism and just like being in your 20s, although I'm very soon not going to be in my 20s anymore. So yeah, I guess it's just kind of like my page as a hub to discuss almost anything and everything that is going on in the world.
And congrats again on your book launch. We're going to get into that a little bit later, but totally. You've lived such a life online, offline, all the twists, all the turns, changes, transitions. I'd love to dive in. Is there like a big move or like a pivotal turning point in particular that stands out that you sort of want to highlight for our audience today?
It's so funny with this question because I feel like, and I don't know if it's how I narrativize my life, but I feel like I've had so many, I can like really see if my, say we're like recording now and I'm looking at our voices, I can see in my sort of timeline of my life these big things that happened, and sometimes it's like a big breakup or like something that happened to me at uni. And I guess the big thing, one of the big things that happened with me was when I was at uni and I started getting into fitness, and that kind of really, that helped me overcome one thing, which was like disordered eating, and then moving to London and starting my podcast, which kind of opened my eyes to the world. And then I guess more recently in the last couple of years, it was having therapy and really kind of getting in deep down into my psyche and all the things that had been wreaking havoc with my mental health for years. But I feel like I'm always, I don't know if it's the way that I like giving everything a reason, but I'm always thinking like, oh, it was because of this bad thing that happened, and now all these great things have happened. And it's a lovely way to live your life, whether or not that's logistically true. I like always finding a way that some difficult moment made me have like a great period of growth kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you mentioned therapy, which I love, such a huge proponent of therapy. And my next question was like, is there something that has like really helped you through those changes and those transitions? Would you say that therapy has been that for you? And if so, like, is there like a tool or something that has like really stood out to you that you feel like you keep going back to, that you learned through any experience with therapy?
So therapy was really instrumental for me. Almost like I think I got quite far on my own. So I tried to do lots of this work by myself. I tried to do loads of introspection. I read loads of different books, and I was trying to figure out why I kept struggling with certain things and going to therapy, it was like someone else, I gave them all this information and they helped me like tie it up in a neat little bow. And I was like, oh, okay, this makes sense now. I think that everyone deals with therapy very differently. Like lots of my friends now, I remember when I went, started going, I had a few friends that went. And now in the last few years, like almost all of my friends are like, actually, do you know what? I think I've got a few things that I need to figure out. I think what it helped me with the most was, it was kind of like making sense of things that happened in my childhood or what triggers I had. And actually just, I think I dealt with things quite quick. It was almost just like getting things off my chest made it easier. But I know that therapy is like not available to everyone. And I know this sounds really trite because people used to say this to me, but I do also wonder if it's just part of getting older. And I'm sure you've experienced this, but like when you're in your early 20s, like everything is so complicated and difficult and everything's so confusing. And as I've gotten older and as I'm approaching 30, I have just found that I can let things brush over me much more easily. And I don't worry about certain things as much as I used to. And I even think back and think, God, imagine how much that would have caused me stress or anxiety. And now I've just got better at dealing with it. But actually saying that, I also, sorry, this is just like remembering as I go along, I had a really bad period of depression at the beginning of this year. And I got into quite a bad place where I like couldn't really get out of bed, couldn't do anything. And I ended up going on antidepressants. And they've been like incredible for me, like really, really helped me. And the interesting thing was when I went to my GP and she was like, I think you're depressed. She then was like going through all of my like history. And she was like, you've come to the GP loads of times for like physical things. And now with this all added up, I think it was depression. I think you've always like gone in and out of depression, but it's just not been that bad. And you haven't been able to verbalize what it is. So you thought it was something else. Mm-hmm. So anyway, sorry, that's a really roundabout. I guess it, like part of it is just, I've started to view my mental health and sort of those psychological things that I think we used to have a lot of shame over struggling with in the same way that I do like my physical health. And I have no shame or no, airs and graces about being honest, not only with like people around me, but also with myself when I'm feeling a bit down or if I feel like I'm being a bit difficult or grumpy. It's, I think I've learned to give myself space to feel however I'm going to feel and then try to sort it out rather than, you know, hiding it. I don't think that answers your question. Sorry.
No. There's so many things in everything that you said. So thank you first and foremost for sharing your experience and also sharing your positive experience with antidepressants, because I feel like maybe that's not talked about as much. And yeah, I completely hear you. It's like that therapist is, it's there for that like brain dump. So it's almost, it feels nice to have that, whether it's on a weekly or a biweekly, like, you know, you're going to be able to have that like release, if that makes sense. So I have personally found that really helpful in therapy as well. And then the other thing I was just going to say, it feels like you've really come to terms with your mental health as you've gotten older. So I feel like that's a really interesting theme and a super solid takeaway as well. Just, it's a sort of natural like progression as we're getting older and along with the changes and transitions we go through so much mentally. So it seems like you've dealt with that in a very proactive way as well.
I think I also didn't used to have the language to recognize that certain things, I kind of saw them as like personality faults or things that I should be embarrassed or ashamed of, or like if I felt very low, I'd be very annoyed at myself. And instead of thinking like, oh, something's not going right in your brain, I'd be like, you're being an absolute biatch today. Do you know what I mean? And then, it was interesting with the antidepressant thing. I'm really lucky. I come from quite a medical family. And when I was really struggling, I was like ringing my mom and sister and I said, guys, I can't do any work, can't do anything. My sister said, oh, you should go on antidepressants. And I was like, really? She was like, yeah, it's like if you had, I don't know, a pain in your leg, you'd take a painkiller. She was like, it's literally just your brain isn't producing enough serotonin. And she explained it to me in such a sort of simple way that I was like, great, went to the doctor. And then the doctor said the same thing. And I posted it on my story. And again, I just didn't really think about it. And so many people were like, oh my God, I've been offered them before, but I just, there's so much stigma around it. And I think I was in a really privileged position of not even knowing, having too much noise around like what medication could be like, because my sister just explained it to me in such a way that was like, well, of course that makes sense. Like, why wouldn't you do that? And they have been really, really positive for me. So yeah, it's been an interesting one. And also I think that the other interesting thing is it's like nothing, another thing I used to think when I was younger, nothing wildly awful was happening to me. And my, apart from like the beginning of this year, I never really had episodes that were, you know, something that was so extremely awful, but it's still enough to pay attention to. And I think sometimes we don't pay enough attention to our mental health. If we're not veering into extreme mental illness, we don't give ourselves enough space or enough time to, you know, think actually maybe we do need to investigate this a bit more. You know, we just sort of go, oh, this is fine, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like in a post-COVID world, like there's been it feels like 10x more of those conversations just happening online and amongst women. And I feel like it is more open, and it's a very nice theme to sort of see.
Definitely.
So Anoni, you've lived such a big life sort of online and virtually. For the audience, can you give a little bit of like a backdrop there? Like, when would you say your sort of like online presence and living that life like sort of started for you?
So I guess I started my Instagram when I was 20 and started to get followers like around when I was like 20, 21. I think I had 10,000 followers when I was 21. And at that stage, that was quite like a massive milestone. I remember even when I had 3,000 followers, me and my friends like went on a night out. We were like, oh my God, I'm famous. Because like back then, no one, it wasn't really a thing. And so I was still at university when I first started. I had like a big breakup and quite like a bit of a traumatic experience when I was at uni. And the whole time I was sort of diarizing my whole life. And because I was so young, now I feel much more cautious and I understand like the permanence of the internet and stuff. But when I was younger, I didn't really know what social media was. I didn't really understand what it meant to be sharing so much of myself. So I would just like chat away all day long on my stories about the most like personal details of my life, and started to grow a following through talking about fitness, but also, you know, like learning about the world. And I was quite open and sharing about my relationships and what I was doing. And from there, it kind of grew. And again, I guess one of those things where I was sort of running before I could walk, it was like I started growing this Instagram and then retrospectively was like, oh crap, this is like a real thing. It started to become my career. And then I sort of went backwards and was like, right, what is this page? What am I doing? And how am I going to turn this into something fulfilling? But a thing that I always talk about in the book was everything. I mean, it obviously was, I was working to get there, but loads of it was just like a happy accident. I was like in the right place at the right time, talking about the right things. I was the right kind of person and my following kind of grew. And I guess I rode the wave and ended up here.
Wow. And it seems like you've had to be quite vulnerable from a pretty young age in sort of sharing your struggles, your life online. I know that's a huge just part of all the themes that you sort of talk about in your book. So are there any like obstacles or challenges you feel like you've had to overcome in being so vulnerable online? I know in my own experience, like it's so challenging every day to show up and to share. And yeah, I'm just curious like what your take is on that.
Well, when I was younger, I used to really enjoy it. I felt like I just had no kind of barriers around it. And also I felt like I'd never really excelled in anything. And I was really gratified by people enjoying my content and enjoying me talking about my life. And so I took that as sort of like an equal swap. I was like, great, if I give these people something, they give me this validation. And then as I started to get older and my income started to depend on my Instagram and stuff, I started to feel a little bit more like, oh, but what if I don't want to say this? And what if I don't want to tell people this? But it took me a long time before I realized that, of course, you don't have to give anyone anything. For a while, I was like, oh, well, I have to show up and I have to do this. And then as I've gotten older, I've found ways to create content and still have my platform where people know me and I can share things, but without it feeling like it's encroaching too much on my personal life. And I guess a big decision I made quite early on was not to do YouTube. When I was like first moved to London, YouTube was sort of like every agent wanted you doing YouTube. It was like the TikTok of the time. And I tried it out a bit and then I thought, no, I don't want to do this, because I had friends that were vloggers and they would vlog their whole lives and their relationships and like what they had for breakfast and what they did all day. And I started to watch how, unbeknownst to them, and it was happening to me on a much smaller scale on Instagram, their life was like merging with their social media life, and they couldn't almost like do anything without feeling like, oh, I better capture this. And that's happened to me with Instagram, but I guess it's slightly less invasive. And I just realized that you kind of start, and I talk about this in the book, and Gia Tolentino talks about this in Trick Mirror, but you start to really blur the lines between like what is my reality and what is like content. And after a while, if you're not careful, the two can kind of become one and the same. And that can be really problematic for like relationships and just your mental health and your understanding of yourself. And I was really glad that I didn't get to that place, because again, once you're in there, once you're giving an audience a specific set of things, if you take that away from them, it doesn't often end up well for the creator and people tend to feel quite shortchanged.
Sure, sure. That makes a lot of sense. And I feel like it seems like it was this sort of natural progression for you from the start. Do you, in your current state of sort of online presence, do you have any boundaries around that when it comes to personal? Or like, how do you yeah, how do you have some sort of boundary when it comes to if it's too personal or is it not too personal? Am I totally off base there?
So it's funny. It's something that I've been like sort of figuring out as I go along. And now that I've gotten older, so I'm in a relationship at the minute, which I don't share online. And it's the first time I've never really shared a relationship. And I kind of have alluded to it, but haven't shared anything. Because my last relationship and the second chapter of the book is kind of like about all the relationships I've had. And I've had like a few online. And the last one I thought was like, I'd done it really well. I hadn't shared too much of him. And when we broke up, it was really good. And then after the breakup, like months and months later, people were kind of speculating and gossiping about it. And I was like, oh, this isn't worth it. I don't know why people need to know about my love life, you know, like even though it's lovely to share it and there's something so nice about seeing someone's relationship. Mm-hmm. I also realized like looking back, and this has happened even after the book, this realization was that part of the reason why I think that relationship lasted for so long was that I loved how we looked online, not literally like looked together, but what that added into my social media space. And I don't actually think if that hadn't been there, if I would have seen how incompatible we were much earlier on, but he was such a fundamental pillar of like how people saw me, and we got on really well, and we were like always really good friends, but I just think as a couple we weren't like necessarily that compatible. So I, after that, I was like, right, I think I'm not going to share a relationship again, because it's not a fundamental seed of what I'm posting about. Like I really want to talk about books and society and the world. Like you don't actually need to know that. So that was like a really firm boundary that's new. And every now and then I'm like, oh, I want to post this picture, but actually I think my relationship is much better for it. Cause I would find like on holiday with my ex, for example, I'd be like constantly trying to think about, again, it's that thing of like merging yourself and your content, where instead of me just taking a nice picture of us and being like, great, that's a cute one of us on holiday done, it would become like, oh, I've got to post this and I should do this. And you kind of make these weird rules for yourself around what you do and don't have to post that are sort of all completely constructed in your mind. On the flip side though, I'm happy to talk about really personal things. Like I would talk about periods, or I'd talk about spots and sweating, or like stuff that other people might find gross and much more personal. I actually find that really, I'm quite shameless about certain things. But I think especially relationships that involve other people, I've now realized that maybe they're a bit too precious to share because they can be spoiled by other people. But if it's just about me and like things that other people might find, I don't know, vulgar or extreme, I really don't mind sharing about that, but I'm like that in real life. But I think sometimes, especially with relationships, having too many other people involved can actually not be a good thing.
Sure, sure. That makes a lot of sense. So sort of understanding your backdrop, your purview, like what keeps you feeling connected, grounded to your family, your friends, your work? Like, are there things that kind of stand out for you?
I have a really good, I'm really lucky. I have a lot of people in my life that I'm really close with. Like my mom, especially, I ring her honestly about 5 times a day. We speak all day long. If I'm like taking the bins out, I ring her. If I'm going for a walk, I ring her. And I'm always talking to her, and I try and see. Another thing I learned like after my last breakup was how much women, female friends have been there the whole time. Like men come and go, but my girlfriends never leave me. And so I've made a really concerted effort to like see my friends more, and also value. It's funny because the book is obviously about social media and I do talk about the good parts, but I really tried to value time offline, being in nature. Again, it's one of those things that it's like when you're younger, you're like, oh, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do that. And you get older and you're like, oh my God, actually going to bed early and like exercising and getting out in nature and seeing your friends is actually really good for you. And all of those really simple things that sound silly genuinely are great for you. And like buying stuff is never going to fill a hole, but you know, seeing a friend for a coffee or making a meal for a loved one really will. So I think just remembering to stay connected, because another thing that can happen when you're low, and I've done this before, is you kind of want to push everyone away and you don't want to see anyone, you want to stay inside and you think that's going to be better for you. And actually always keeping those levels of communication open, whether it's even just on text or, you know, going for a walk, whatever it is, I think fundamentally the best thing that keeps you happy and sane is like a community, whether it's 2 people or 20. I think it's really important.
Yeah, I love that so much. I love that you said that. I feel like it's those like little moments, like calling up your mom, going for a walk with a friend. And this is something that keeps coming up constantly with all my guests. So I love to hear that. And I guess on that sort of same token, I feel like confidence building is a huge theme for your book, for you, also for just women in general. Is there something that you could recommend that sort of pulls you up when you're feeling down? Or is there something that you go to or your mind goes to when it comes to like your own confidence?
I think with one of the really good things, a great thing to do with confidence is, again, a really obvious one, but just fake it till you make it. And also no one really cares when we do things, because it's our life. Every time we act, it's like, oh my God, that was such a big thing. That was such a big thing. But everyone else is thinking that about them. And everyone else is encountering like however many people every day. And if you do something slightly wrong, realistically, no one's going to remember it tomorrow. And I think about this with most things, whether it's like how I dress or what I'm doing that day. It's like you have 365 days in the year. And if you don't give it a go, like nothing might go wrong. But if you do, something might go right. And there's always space to mess up. And there's always space to get things wrong. No one's going to really care. And there's something thrilling. There's that thing about, it always does the rounds, but it's about doctors talking about what do patients say on their deathbeds. And they always say, I wish I'd done that thing. I wish I'd just gone and done it. I regret working so hard and I regret not, you know, living my life how I wanted to live it and living how other people, how you perceive other people want you to. Because really, if you're happy and you're confident and you're doing what you want, everyone else around you will be happy. But we have this idea that we've got to bend ourselves, especially women, that you've got to sort of like bend yourself about around other people's wants and needs. But actually, if that's making you cranky or it's not making you happy, you won't be a great friend or a great partner or a great sibling or whatever. I think that just giving things a go, it very rarely will something bad happen. It just might not happen. And I think that I am quite confident anyway. But I think that's because I don't necessarily think before I do something, and I think through my mouth. So I don't know what I'm going to say until it comes out. Like I don't have like a freak. So I'm good at, you know, just going for something and sort of like in hindsight, which is what the whole book is about. I sort of go for things that I have to like retrospectively figure out why I did it. So that's a great thing. But yeah, I just think, I have a tattoo actually that my mum is her writing. She always says it to me. It just says, go for it. Cause I would say stuff to her and she'd be like, just go for it always. And I think that's a really nice thing to think of.
I love that. I love that. It's so positive. It's so uplifting. And it's you put it into sort of simple terms. Like you're like, why not? You know, like put on the little bit of lip gloss, like throw your hair up, like, you know, put an outfit on, walk out the door, like just take that step forward. It is simple, but at the same time, complex in its own right. So I feel like imposter syndrome is also like a theme that's come up a lot in your book. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like that kind of goes hand in hand with confidence building and just as women, like feeling like, you know, we're not enough. Can you talk a little bit about your own experience with imposter syndrome and yeah, any tools and tips and tricks that you could share?
So it's funny, I'm really confident and I'll go and do the thing, but will I have like imposter syndrome the whole way through? Yes. So I'm really good at getting myself out there, putting myself in the position, talking the talk, walking the walk, but the whole time I'm doing it, I'll be thinking I shouldn't be here. But no one, the people that think they should be there are deluded. Like everyone else, most people in the world are walking around feeling like, I shouldn't be doing this or I'm not the right person to do this. But the only way you're ever going to learn to do something, and this is something I write right at the end of the book and it's really stuck with me. It's from a book I read called Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow by Gabrielle Zevin. It's a gorgeous book. And it's about these two friends that make video games. And I write at the end, she's talking about how she, one of the creators, is like, oh, I haven't made this video game as good as I want to make it. But the only way, there comes a time in every creative's life when your taste exceeds your ability, but the only way to get as good as your taste is to create anyway. I hope that makes sense. So I guess the idea is like, even if you're not ready, even if you don't feel like you belong yet, you're never going to get closer unless you start. Like you're never ever going to be in a position of, you're never going to wake up as an expert. At some point, everyone is, it's always someone's first time. For instance, like in the gym, I'm really confident in the gym, but obviously there was a time years ago when I wasn't. But the only reason I've got here is because I showed up every day. And I think you just have to keep showing up. Again, fake it till you make it and realize that I'm sure everyone has this, but there'll be certain things in your life that without realizing you just got naturally better at it because you practice it a lot, whether it's, you know, running or exercising or reading or just like little habits you have, even making your bed in the morning. I don't know. It's really simple things that you just challenge yourself to do and you've done it and you get to the point where you're like, oh, that's so easy. I don't even think about that anymore. But that used to be a chore. I used to find that hard. It's the same with anything in life. It's always a struggle at the beginning and you always feel a bit resistant to it and like you don't belong. But if you stick with it and you get through that feeling, you'll come out the other side. And then also there's that thing, if you get to the top and then you have to go down again because you're always, you know, there's never an end. But yeah, I guess like feel the fear and do it anyway is what. Yeah.
I love that. I say this too, and it's so simple. It's like just getting your reps in. Like I feel like as a mom of one, now a mom of two, like just the more practice with the baby things, the toddler things, podcasting. Like I've had 4 or 5 seasons. Like you've had plenty of seasons of your podcast. Like the more episodes you get down, like it's just getting your reps in. It's the simplest thing, but the more you do it, the more confident and comfortable you get. So it really rings true.
I also think that's such a nice way of putting it, because what we often do is think about the end goal and the thing we want, and that feels so far away and so huge. Whereas if you just think like, tomorrow I'm going to go to the gym, and then tomorrow you think, tomorrow I'm going to go, and then before you know it, you've done 6 months. But if you think about, oh my God, I want to have whatever your end goal is when you're here, I think that's when people, it's too much, it's unmanageable, like you can't even fathom how you're going to get there. So take it day by day, getting your reps in is a really nice way of putting it. And yeah, before you know it, you'll be away.
Yeah, absolutely. So Anoni, what lights a fire in you? Like, why do you do all the things that you do? And like, what keeps you moving?
I'm very nosy and I'm very curious and I love talking nonstop. And I've always been like that since I was little. And I'm fascinated by the world and people. And I think what social media has allowed me to do is be in contact with so many different people all the time. And to just share and talk. It's so funny. All of my school reports would be like, she did really well in her exam, but she just doesn't stop talking. Or like, she's really bright, but she just doesn't stop talking. And it was so funny when I started my podcast and that became the biggest thing in my career. And I was like, God, isn't it funny how it must have been very annoying that I was talking the whole time, but that sometimes we don't realize those little things that we maybe see as negatives actually might be our strengths and the things we're really good at. And maybe if someone was like, actually, she's like a really natural speaker, like maybe you should do this or whatever. It's, yeah, I think like connecting people and telling stories, and it has always been my thing. So that kind of keeps me going. There can be times of being online, it can be quite draining, and I don't enjoy it as much, but I've figured out, I think I've kind of found the sweet spot where I don't have to give too much away, but I'm still showing up for my audience, but I'm also giving them space to talk. Yeah. And then just like generally in life, what sets me on fire, just, I don't know, I love nature. You know, I went to Ireland, we were just saying before, but I went to Ireland over the weekend, and I've always grown up in the countryside, but my family are from London. I've always said, oh, I want to be in London forever, and I love the city. And sometimes I forget how much I just love being in nature. Being by the sea is just incredible, and like seeing animals and stuff. And I think you can get quite hepped up in this idea of like being a career woman, I want to have all these achievements. And sometimes I sit back and I'm like, where has that even come from? Like, is that actually what I want? Or do I just want to prove something to someone out there that, you know, I don't know. It's something I'm thinking about at the minute, this idea of, you know, wanting to be the woman that has it all or does it all. And it's like, what if I just want to sit in a little hut on the beach?
Yeah, absolutely. But no, I love that. And I relate to that so much. I feel like we show up so much online with our businesses, and there's so much that's to be done every single day. And it can be draining, like you said. And it's like, what brings you back down to earth? And it seems like for you, right, because I've been following all your stories in Ireland, it looks absolutely stunning. And it's that like connection, just, you know, whatever that is for you, like finding that, getting your head out of your phone. But it's easier said than done right now when everything feels so, you know, go, go, go. So I really get that. So I feel like as a last question for you, ultimately, can you truly be authentic online? I feel like this has been a huge theme for you. And I'd love to kind of bring it home with that.
Well, I might surprise you with the answer, maybe not, but no, I don't think you can be authentic online, purely because I think the minute that you open your phone, something changes, like whether it's conscious or subconscious in your brain. The minute you go to share something or tell something, something changes. I think authenticity, or like that sort of real truth, that raw feeling, can only exist sort of in the moment. Even when you start retelling a story to a friend, you know, you've kind of like butchered a little bit of it and some details have changed. So I think you can be true to yourself, and I think you can narrate or sort of like retell something in a way that's authentic to the story of what happened. But I don't think it's like, you can never, because also we aren't, as humans, you're never really authentic. Probably only your partner or someone that lives with you 24/7 really sees you in your true multicolored, multifaceted self. You know, every time that we're online, as much as you might want to be like, this is me raw, there's no way that we're not just subconsciously editing or filtering or changing things. And but I also don't think that's an issue. I actually think we need to stop demanding authenticity from everyone all the time. And this is something that is, I kind of contradict myself, but with, you know, like showing up online and people being like, oh, you're only showing the good bits. It's like, but if you aren't an influencer, and I know that influencers are held to a different standard because we have like an audience and stuff, but no one else is really posting like the shitty stuff and the crap stuff. That's not what these, that's kind of the idea behind the platforms. It's like there is a usefulness in sharing you know, the reality side of things and like the raw side of things, if that's what someone wants to do. But fundamentally, I think that like that shouldn't be an expectation. I don't think anyone owes anyone their trauma or their truth. Like, I think that we maybe are, as a whole, putting people, well, not only influencers like myself, but these social media platforms to too high a place. And we're like holding them and expecting them to be everything to everyone. Mm-hmm. Social media just isn't real life. Like I go on Twitter and I'll be getting so angry about some argument that's happening. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe it. And then I lock my phone and I go see my friends. None of them even know what I'm talking about. None of them have a strong opinion. It's just not, it doesn't represent reality. It's a form of reality, but I think we have to stop. I think we can use it really well, but I think we should stop expecting it to do so much all the time.
Yeah. It's so funny. I completely get that. It's very tricky. And I feel like I was having a conversation with actually a London friend recently about the idea of the photo dump, the carousel photo dump. And we're like, you know, thinking that this is this like way to just like put up all your past photos of the week. You know, this is like your photo dump, right? But it's like, actually that carousel is the most carefully curated, you know, options of photos that you're selecting to share. So again, it's like, it feels like an oxymoron a lot of the time, but you're right. And it's a choice at the end of the day about, you know, what you stand for and what you're going to share. That's like a conscious choice. It's not an easy thing to figure out, by the way. It feels like this like mathematical problem that we're all trying to solve. But yeah, I mean, I think you're doing an amazing job by sharing all of it. You're sharing all, and you're sharing the struggles, you're sharing the transitions, the changes, and so much. So I really do give kudos to you.
Thank you so much.
I'd love to touch on your book quickly. I meant to ask you, like, what's the biggest takeaway or something you want to share from your new book? I also think we're going to be doing a little book giveaway on social, so all listeners look out for that when this episode is live. But yeah, from your mouth, I'd love to hear, like, biggest takeaway or something you really want to hit home about the book.
So it's funny, I didn't even really realize this until I finished writing it, but the whole book, as much as it is an exercise in me, kind of like, I wanted to teach, or like kind of not teach is the wrong word, explain like what it really is to be an influencer, kind of like demystify the term and the industry. But a lot of the book is actually me having a fight with myself about why I hate being called an influencer. I'm kind of unpacking the term, but it's not just, it's sort of like I was figuring it out. Again, this seems to be a theme where I like to figure things out, you know, with everyone watching. Mm-hmm. It's sort of me unpacking like, why is that term so loaded? You know, why does it have such negative connotations? And I guess what I want people to take away is, again, it's like one of the things I talk about in the book is that as a creator, we're very lucky in that we see behind the scenes. And I think, I don't know if you'll agree with this, but I feel slightly less impacted than, I guess, straight consumers who don't really know what goes into doing that photo dump, or like what is the best lighting, or don't know how to make their lives look picture perfect in a way that we've been doing for years. So I find, as when I go on social media, I don't really have as much comparison. I don't find it as harmful. And what I was hoping, and that writing this book, it was funny, I did a talk the other day when my friend interviewed me about the book, and one of the women there was like, I read it and I was like, oh my God, you're just like us. I was like, yes, of course I am. Like, that's the whole thing. It's like this whole idea that there's like an influencer who's here and a follower is here. It's just all bullshit. It's just numbers on a page and we're all just doing different jobs. And actually, you know, it's a lot of it is smoke and mirrors. I guess I wanted to kind of bring reality into what we're doing, and as influencers showing that it's kind of just like being in any other freelance role. It's just by design, it's very glossy.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like that's the perfect way of putting it. So I love that. Is there anything next for you? Any upcoming podcast all-star guests that you want to share? Anything at all? We'd love to hear.
Wow. I have two new podcasts in the works, which I can't actually tell you about yet. But one is not just, one is with two other co-hosts. and it's kind of going to be like a pop culture kind of podcast. And the other one is just me answering questions. So kind of like my agony answers that I do on Instagram, but with like on a podcast.
Okay. Amazing. Well, we'll look out for it. Thank you so much. This conversation was so fun. I loved chatting with you. Where can everybody follow you, find your book, find your podcast, like all of that jazz?
So I am on Instagram. It's just at Oenone, O-E-N-O-N-E. And then there's a link in my bio where you can buy my book, but you can get it like wherever you get your books from, Waterstones, Amazon, etc. And my podcast is called Adulting, about all of the things we never got taught in school. But the most recent series I did was called Adulting 2.0 Timelines, which is a similar vibe to this podcast. And it's talking about, you know, how times change as we're getting older, how people do things at different points in their lives.
I love that. Well, we're so aligned there. Thank you so much again. And I hope next time I see you or talk to you, it's in London town. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you found value from this episode, please subscribe, rate, and review, and tag us on Instagram at The Big Move Podcast and at mroberts.m. We always love connecting with you, and we'll catch you next time.